Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversation, featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Today's lineup is sterling because the artists sitting with me now are not only good at what they do, but they're genuine, down-to-earth human beings, and they can relate to everyday living. That shows also in their music. Welcome, Joel and Labriska Hemphill.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks for coming, and you guys have a history. If there ever was a historic name in gospel music, I think Hemphill is one of the top.
Well, thank you very much. Been here a long time. Maybe that counts for something.
Well, what year did you start?
Well, I was pastoring a church in Louisiana, started in 1961. And about 1966, I began to write gospel music. Mm-hmm. Let's see, we bought our first bus in 68. I was still pastoring. Pastored on till 71, moved to Nashville in 72.
We signed our first recording contract in 66 with Canaan Records.
Wow. That was a division of Word.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Before then, in your growing up years, were you around gospel music a lot? Did you come from a family, a heritage of this music?
My dad was a minister, and of course, music was always a part of our worship. But as far as gospel concerts, we seldom ever went. I remember one time, I think, going to a Blackwood Brothers concert. But Labriska, that was her life.
Yeah.
Yes, my family was the Happy Goodman family. My mother was the sister to the men of the Happy Goodman family. And the first time I ever sang on stage, I was 9 years old, and we sang at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee, where they have the Grand Ole Opry.
And I was going to get to that at some point to tell us about the relationship with the Goodman. So specifically, who?
My mother was Gussie May, and mm-hmm. that's the oldest sister of the Happy Goodman family. Howard was the oldest. Mother was the oldest sister.
Sister, okay. And so it was to you, Uncle Howard, Uncle Sam,
Uncle Howard, right.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I grew up in that atmosphere, grew up backstage at, I think maybe they just started the all-night sings when I was about 8 or 9 in Atlanta,
sure.
Georgia. I was at one of the first. I'm not sure I was at the first, but it was really phenomenal because we had, up until that time, sang on Sunday afternoon on the Sunday singings, and then it was taken from there to the Saturday night gospel singings, all night singing, and really it lasted. The first one I went to lasted till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Quite accurate.
First time I met the Goodmans, Daniel, it was 1957, and it was Howard, Rusty, and Vestal, and Labriska.
Really?
And I changed their quartet into a trio. They came to Louisiana to do a revival for my dad, tent revival. Labriska and I met and dated for a few weeks and married in June of 57.
And so you first saw them, first saw
her
Labriska
with the Goodmans. Yes, uh-huh.
Did anything spark an interest at that point?
Well, kinda, just a little.
Something happened that's been 49 years.
I guess so.
He started showing up at all of our revivals around in those areas. And so we began to look at one another and go out. And we double dated with Rusty. Mm-hmm. He was not married.
I loved all the Goodmans, but Labriska was my favorite.
There is happiness complete. Our God specializes in good things that you and I really need. Good things for the body and spirit. All you have to do is just believe. Good things, all you have to do is just believe.
Never feel alone and lonely. Jesus is an ever-present friend. We don't have to worry over past things. He forgives our failures and our sins. Let him
him be your savior, let him be your friend, one who will accompany and cleanse. I've got specialized in good things, things that you and I really need. Good things for the body and spirit, all you have to do is just believe. I've got specialized in good things, things that you and I
Spotlight focus is on the Hemp Hills, specifically Joel and Labriska. And a few minutes ago, we mentioned Labriska's relation to the Goodman family, very famous singing family in gospel music. I asked Joel about family reunions and get-togethers between the Hemp Hills and the Goodmans.
Oh, yes, yes. The families were close. After we married, sure. Howard and Vestal went to Madisonville, Kentucky, and pastored a church, and we pastored when I was 21. I had a wife and three children.
Wow.
And was pastoring a church in Bastrop, Louisiana. Uh-huh. So they would come and preach for us, and we would go and preach for them. So we were very close.
Sure. Tell me how your preaching and writing sermons also goes hand in hand with writing songs.
Well, we were only reaching a small number of people, I guess you'd say. At that time, our church was probably around 150 people, small paper mill town in Louisiana, and 14,000 people. We had a radio program, and so I preached on Sunday, and Labriska and I sang in church. But we began to pray and ask the Lord for a way to reach beyond this small paper mill town, and what he gave was songwriting. So I see a lot of my songs as just mini sermons. You know, you have about 3 minutes to present the problem and the solution. And of course, Jesus is he's the answer. So anyway, they're just mini sermons.
When did you start writing songs?
I started in 1966. I was 27 years old. Was not a songwriter and really hadn't aspired to be a songwriter. I always loved good gospel songs and admired songwriters, but it was not anything that I'd really aspired to. But long in this time of searching and seeking for a greater outreach than we had, I was at the church praying one day, and when I finished my devotion, I got up and went to the piano and wrote a song. And I went home, and Labriska was not impressed at all.
At all.
I was going to ask.
That's right.
I was not impressed.
I mean, Uncle Rusty Goodman was a great songwriter, yeah. And of course, Dottie Rambo and Bill Gaither and a lot of great songwriters were out there, and she didn't think we needed another one.
I couldn't understand why he did this.
Yeah, yeah.
It was almost like I was out of, you know, going in a side sure. direction.
Sure.
So a few days later, I wrote another song, and by the third song, then Labriska was getting excited.
It was a good song. Not in a Million Years was the third one.
Yeah. Okay. And by then, the Goodmans were traveling and singing and doing quite well. So when they came, they might drop by and sing at our church on Sunday or whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we were with them in a concert in West Monroe, and I told Rusty, I said, Rusty, I wrote some songs, and I'd like to send them to you. Well, he said, put them on tape. You know, it makes it easier to tell them that they're no good, if they're on tape, you know.
Sure, sure.
So I sent these songs, and I didn't hear for a couple of weeks. And I thought, well, he didn't like them, and he just hates to tell me.
Yeah.
But that phone call came one day. I was mowing the yard, and Labriska came out, and she was excited. She said, Rusty's on the phone, and he likes your songs. So I went to the phone, and he said, Bubba, you didn't write these songs. We were very close. He called me Bubba. He said, you didn't write these songs. I said, yes, I did. So he said, we'd like to record two out of the three. And that was on their album called Bigger and Better. Mm-hmm. And I said, we'll pay your expenses to Nashville, you know, to the session to make sure we get them right.
Yeah.
Well, hey, that's big stuff for us, sure. You know, to get to go to Nashville and be at this recording session. And So that kind of helped get things started.
I think the next year he wrote Pity the Man, and that was the biggest song at that time that we had. That was a really good song, and it was running for the Dove Award.
Yeah.
When they only had the top five.
Nowadays, the Dove Awards has the top 10 awards, but Dove nominated Pity the Man with the Hemphills right now on Daniel Britton Friends.
I guess we should pity the man in this world. We must use the earth for a bed. And I guess we should pity the man who must toil from dawn till dusk for his bread.
A song called The Way Is Made, and we recorded it later, but it wasn't anything that outstanding. Then the second song was called The Point of No Return, which the Goodmans recorded. Bobby sang that. And then Not in a Million Years.
Sure.
And we were sitting there and just overwhelmed to hear. We were in RCA Studio B, where a lot of famous people had recorded. And of course, the Goodmans were recording there. Marvin Norcross of Canaan Records, vice president of Word, was there as the producer. So we're listening to the playback, and Marvin never heard us sing. All he knew, we were related to the Goodmans. We wrote these songs. But he was a very gracious man. He said, Rusty, he said, why don't we just put this on the album 12 times? And, of course, that's heady stuff, you know, for a young writer. Well, LaBrisca
what were the first two
spoke
songs
up
that you
and
wrote?
Said, Mr. Norcross, I predict that in less than 6 months, you'll be recording Joel and I. Mm-hmm. And he just smiled. He said, is that right? She said, yes. Well, I nearly fell out of my chair. Because I thought, well, wow, this guy never heard us sing, hum, or whistle, you know.
Yeah.
So when we got out of the studio, I said, darling, why did you say that? She said, well, if I'd have thought about it, I probably wouldn't have said it.
I said, I must have lost my mind.
But anyway.
It's kind of bold.
Yeah. In less than 6 months, they had started Canaan Land Publishing Company, and they wanted us as writers. So Marvin called and said, we'll give you a recording contract if you will write for us. So we did. Yeah. And so in less than 6 months, we were back at RCA Studio B with this wonderful team of musicians. So that was our first album.
When you had the songwriting contract, were you under pressure to perform, pressure to write?
Well, not necessarily. Just what we wrote, you know, Marvin got to publish it. Yeah. And, of course, that always helps pay the bills and pay for the recording sessions.
Yeah.
Makes it more attractive to the record company.
Yeah.
As Kyla Rowland's children always told her, can't wait till Mama's check comes because we'll get a new pair of shoes.
God set the stage for our Lord's first coming when his mother was already great with child. From Nazareth to where the prophet said he would be born was to Mary a hard 60 miles. God showed the world forever, his prophecies are sure, and the light of his word will not grow dim. He caused Caesar to decree that the whole world must be taxed just so Jesus would be born in Bethlehem. God is setting the stage for the end of the world and the coming of Jesus in glory. We already know how it's all going to end. His word tells the rest of the story. God has a master plan, the pen is in his hand. He's writing every line on every page. So rest your troubled soul. I'm Bob and Carol, directing and setting the stage. Changing so fast, it's enough to put your head in a spin. And signs that we see can only mean that Jesus is soon coming again. So carry on, church, unshaken by the news. It tells us our redemption draws nigh. When we have reaped the harvest, as he said we would, then Jesus will split the eastern skies. God is setting the stage for the end of the world and the coming of Jesus in glory. We already know how it's all going to end. His word tells the rest of the story. God has a master plan, the pen is in his hand. He's writing every line on every page. So rest your troubled soul. I'm Bob in control, directing and setting the stage. God has a master plan, the pen is in his hand. He's writing every line on every page. So rest your troubled soul. I'm Bob in control, directing and setting the stage.
This is Daniel Britt and Friends. That's a classic sound in gospel music, the Hymn Pills. And my guests today are Joel and LaBrisca Hymn Pill.
I've written down some of my favorites, and you can tell me at what point they came and how they came along. And LaBrisca, have you contributed to the songwriting?
I did,
aspect?
Especially at first. I did. The Eyes of Jesus was my idea. And Joel took it and wrote it, and it was wonderful. I was a part of several songs. I can't remember now. I wrote a song called I'm Willing. Rusty recorded one of my songs. What was that?
Life Evermore. A minister came to our booth here at the convention last night, an older minister, and he was tearing up. And he said, I went through a real rough time, I think back in the 80s. And he said, I was in deep depression. Mm-hmm. And he said, the song that brought me through was LaBrisca's song, I'm Willing. Yeah. So you never know. Well, LaBrisca's written some good songs.
Walking in God's Sunshine, that was a pretty good song.
Mm-hmm. Goodman's recorded that.
Yeah.
The song that introduced me probably to gospel music, I mean, I can't think of anything before this. And I was 3 or 4, and I was walking around the house. And they tell me I could say all the books of the Bible, and I could probably count, you know, to 10 or something. And I could sing He's Still Working on Me. And that's the earliest recollection of music. And I remember sitting, you know, the big floor speaker, and I would sit there, and I would get as close to the speaker as I could. And I guess Candy sang the lead. It was on a double ward, I guess the top 10 songs of whatever year that was. I don't know, 79 or 83.
79 or 80. I wrote it about 79, so people became aware of it about that
year. And there was a skip. There was a scratch, I guess, in the record, and about three-quarters of the way through, maybe when you were just sort of doing the reprise or repeating the tagline, it would kind of skip. And so if I ever heard a correct version of the song, it sounded off to me because I was so used to it.
That's part of it.
That belonged there.
That's right. Good.
So tell me how that song, which is probably one of the, you know, that's just going to live and live and live. How did that come about?
Well, of course, if you ride the bus a lot, you see a lot of bumper stickers.
Yeah.
And I saw a bumper sticker one day that said, be patient. God is not finished with me yet.
Yeah.
So that kind of sparked an idea, and I began to think about it. And it was after that I was in a deer stand. I'm a deer hunter, and you get to do a lot of thinking. And I've written a few songs in deer stands. And so
Back then, that was about the only time you had a loan.
That's
really.
Right.
Yeah.
Wife, 3 kids, and 8 musicians, and a bus driver. So, you know, So anyway, I was on a deer stand, and it came back to me. And so I wrote it and came and sang it.
Well, you called me on the telephone from there, from one of a truck stop.
Little town, yeah.
And sang me that, and I knew when I heard it that it was a hit song. But I had to convince the record company. Bill Traylor was ahead right then. I had to convince him to put that out as a single because it was so laid back.
Right.
And it was subtle.
Yeah.
But he didn't know that it just wore a groove right in your head.
Bill's a dear friend. But he was looking for a fast barn burner, you know.
Yeah.
And we had one. And he said, okay, I'm going to put this working song out for six weeks.
6 weeks.
Yeah. It doesn't do anything. You know, we're going to rush this fast song out.
Sure.
And, of course, I'm not bragging, but it stayed number one for 8 months. And it wasn't payola.
right.
God just blessed.
It's kind of like, what's the Disney World song? It's a small world after all. It gets stuck in your head.
And right.
That's a really good one to get stuck because of the lyrics. I don't care how old you are, young you are, it applies.
Well, thank you.
I remember just because this song is so unique to me. Was it a woodblock? What was the little, I can't describe it, not a drum beat, but the little...
That's right. It was a woodblock.
Woodblock. Who produced that? Was that Larry Goss? No. I'm trying to think of who produced that.
Yeah. That was Gary Smith on piano.
Okay.
Yeah, Gary went on to be with Dolly Parton and Barbara Mandrell. Mm-hmm. And, but that was him on the piano and... Partly his idea. You know, these musicians are amazing. I mean, they just get there and they create something. And a song has a certain feel and it calls for a certain feel.
Right.
And
I think Jerry Crutchfield
might have done that.
I think he produced that.
He's still working on me to make me what I'm to be. It took him just a week to make the moon and stars, the sun and the earth and Jupiter and Mars. How loving and patient he must be. He's still working on me.
There really ought to be a sign upon my heart. Don't judge her yet, there's an unfinished part. But I'll be perfect just according to his plan, fashioned by the master's love.
must be. He's still working on me.
In the mirror of his word, reflections that I see make me wonder why he never gave up on me. He loves me as I am and helps me when I pray. Remember, he's the potter, I'm the clay.
He's still working on me to make me what I ought to be. Took him just a week to make the moon and stars, the sun and the earth and Jupiter and Mars. How loving and patient he must be. He's still working on me.
Everybody sing.
He's still working on me to make me what I ought to be. It took him just a week to make the moon and stars, the sun and the earth and Jupiter and Mars. How loving and patient he must be. He's still working on me.
Once again.
He's still working on me.
That song brings back great memories for me, and it featured Candy Christmas, of course the Hemp Hills, a family group. And I asked Joel and Labriska about the time when the kids started traveling and singing as part of the group and band.
We married in June of 57. Joey was born in August of 58. And then we had them about 6 months apart. They were all little at the same time. But yeah. Joey came when we've been married 14 months. And then the others are about 14 months.
Yeah.
They're about
but they were
months.
Interested, very interested in what we were doing and wanted to be a part of it. And they knew the songs, they knew the music. Trent was taking bass in school. And so as soon as one bass player left, we said, "You're it." And he nearly fainted.
Oh, wow.
But he knew the songs and he knew how to play. And when our baritone singer left, we integrated Joey in there. And it's just when a space came open,
sure,
and they were ready to fill it. Mm-hmm. We put them in there.
Well, it's a good way to get to ride the bus. Otherwise, you have to stay home.
And I don't know if riding the bus is a real good idea anyway. But sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't.
And then later on, when we needed a piano player, Trent was our bass player, mm-hmm, but he knew the arrangements, mm-hmm, and he knew what sound he wanted where. He was our manager of our band. Mm-hmm. So we had several piano players come and stay and then leave. And so Trent said, "I'm tired of this breaking in new piano players, so I'm going to be our piano player."
Yeah.
So he sold his car and rode around with Joey for a few months and went out and bought a big grand piano and learned to play the piano. So that was in
the
fall.
It was downstairs right under our bed, and he played all night long.
Oh, my.
But, hey, he became a great piano player. Yeah.
Any conflicts as a family on the road in close quarters like that?
Very few. We've had other people ride our bus and say, this is the most peaceful bus I've ever been on.
Wow.
Of course, we'd always start the trip with prayer because you never know what you're going to encounter along the way.
We learned how to give each other their space. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to give people their space.
I'd imagine, yeah.
And respect what everybody does. Everybody has his own job to do,
and you
respect that and try not to infringe on it.
Master of the Wind is another great Hemp Hill song. How did that one come about?
I was in Montana, and it had begun to snow, and we were leaving Great Falls, mm-hmm, and I was going to be driving the bus, and some of our friends called and said, "Have you closed this road from here to Billings?" Mm-hmm. Two-lane highway, not much shoulder on the road. good highway, but just a two-lane.
Canyons and, on each
side. Oh, yeah, and they said, we've closed some highways, but that one's open. So we left, got out there about 30 or 40 miles, and that little gentle Montana snow turned into a howling ice storm, wind storm. It was treacherous. The highway glazed over. There was no good place to pull over. So I just slowed down, 15 miles an hour, 20, mm-hmm. and I actually felt the bus slide a time or two. And so I'm praying, I'm saying, God, please have your hand on the wheel of this bus because it's beyond me. I know God's the master of everything, but right then I needed the master of the wind.
Yeah.
And I mean, that thought just dropped into my spirit. And it's like he said, I'm the master of the wind. I calmed the storm on the Sea of Galilee, and I'm going to see you through. So the storm kept blowing, but I settled down.
Yeah, yeah.
And began to tear up and just think about, God's protection. He's seen us through lots of miles. And then a little bit I was riding, I know the master of the wind. Yeah. So by the time we rolled into Billings the next morning, I had that song finished. And so we've all seen our storms. And life has its unexpected storms. We enjoy singing that still.
I know the master of the wind. I know the maker of the rain. He can calm the storm, make the sun shine again. I know master of the wind.
Sometimes I soar like an eagle to the sky. Among the peaks my soul can be found. An unexpected storm may drive me from the high. It may bring me low, but it cannot bring me down.
I know the master of the wind. I know the sun shine again. I know the master of the wind. I know the master of the wind. I know the maker of the rain.
You have a pretty good memory.
Have a pretty good memory.
He has a wonderful memory.
I was going to ask if you are ever in a place where you don't have a pen and paper or a tape recorder and a thought or a hook or a melody comes to you and you can't write it down or document it anyway, and you've got to wait a few hours, is it hard to, do you have to repeat it to yourself?
Oh, I have to repeat it to myself a lot, yeah. But I have just stopped at a red light and grabbed an envelope and just
scribbled.
I passed a Church of Christ church in Nashville, Madison, Tennessee, one day, and they had a sign out on the marquee, "Prepare now." It wasn't raining when Noah built the ark.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so at the next red light, I had a pen and an envelope and scratching down, "It wasn't raining when Noah built the ark." Yeah. And that became a number one.
I reminded Joel the other day, though, when he was a lot younger, we were so busy building our house, traveling. It would come time to record and start getting our material ready to record. And I'd follow him around with a pen and a pad and say, now give me the words to your songs. What do you have? And he'd be working on the house. He'd be doing, hammering, whatever.
Yeah.
And he would quote me those songs, and I would write them down, and then I'd get our secretary to type them up for us. So he had them stored in his mind.
Wow. Consider the lilies. That comes straight from Scripture.
So, right.
So where'd the melody come from for that?
Just out of my spirit, Daniel. Sometimes when you get a lyric, and I can get more words than I can melodies, but the best song, I think, the best songs that I write, the melody comes with the lyric.
Right.
When it doesn't, then I try not to struggle with it. I give it to LaBrisca or Candy or one of our producers. You know, Larry Goss has done that for us, Jerry Crutchfield, different ones. Help with melodies, because if you get too many melodies that are similar, it gets the cookie cutter effect, you know, and you need that individuality with your songs. So, but that was one that just the words and melody came together.
Tell me about your personal health issues, and I know the depression came at some point later in life, and how has that affected your songwriting today, now on this side of it?
Well, in 1990, I had colon cancer and had some serious complications, unexpected complications, and went down to skin and bone after my surgery. Mm-hmm. My doctors couldn't explain it. I began to go to specialists, and they couldn't explain it. And so I guess I panicked. I probably didn't handle it well. I'd always been an up person, driven person, And now,
optimistic,
very optimistic. And for this period of time, I had to just eat certain things that Labriska cooked: steamed vegetables, broiled fish, purified water, mm-hmm. poached eggs, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I guess I got maybe a little too self-focused and began to just, I couldn't sleep. I didn't sleep for 2 weeks. Mm. Begun to hallucinate and went into a hospital, a mental hospital. Stayed there for 10 days, rough experience, yeah. and came out and I could sleep because I was under the doctor's care and had heavy medication. Mm-hmm. But the unexpected thing out of that was the depression. When I got home, I was just so severely depressed. And then I got real self-focused, and I thought, well, we've all made mistakes, but I'm thinking I've done something just real, real bad.
You and I didn't know the term clinical depression.
No.
We didn't even know what was wrong with you. Do you remember?
Right.
We
sure.
read and read and found out that it was depression.
Right.
We didn't even know about that.
So I couldn't go get a haircut by myself. Labriska had to take me for 2 years, mm-hmm. and I couldn't write, record, sing, minister in any way. Couldn't talk on the phone, couldn't pay the light bill. I mean, that's how bad it was. I just could not function. And stared at the wall or stared at the ceiling, you know, lay on the couch all day. But a lot of people prayed for me. And in March of 92, I went into another psychiatric hospital, went under the care of an older doctor, and he got me weaned off of some of that heavy medication, got me on some lighter stuff. Still, I was depressed throughout 92. And on November the 8th, 1992, one Sunday morning in church, our pastor called me up. And he said, Brother Hemphill, we were on the back. We only went on Sunday morning. I couldn't deal with people, couldn't face people. And he called me up and said, God spoke to me. He's going to heal you today. So they laid hands on me and prayed for me. And that's the last day of depression that I've ever had. Wow. And I got up the next day and I said, Labriska, it's not here. It's gone. I knew it was gone. It took her a little bit longer to realize it because, yeah. you know, she didn't know my inner feelings. But sure. And we'd had some ups and downs with my emotions through that time period. And I saw what my depression was doing to Labriska because it was pulling her down. And we spent a lot of lonely times because everybody goes on with their lives and, you know, we're just there. But I was ready to live. And in a short time, I was pastoring a church south of Nashville there for 13 months and back songwriting. And mm-hmm. since then, Daniel, we've been over a big part of the world from, yeah. you know, South Africa, England, Ireland, Scotland,
I
Israel,
will say
Egypt.
He's different. He is different since
yeah.
then. He'll whistle around the house, and I look at him and I say, my other husband used to not ever whistle.
Well, suffering produces compassion.
Yeah.
There's no shortcut to compassion. If you see a compassionate person, they've suffered mm-hmm. because it creates empathy. And so I have more compassion for hurting people. I have plenty of time for depressed people or mm-hmm. people who are suicidal. I spend a good
bit of time. It burns out a lot of ego.
Yeah.
It really
yeah.
does. Mm-hmm. It makes you understand what's real important in life.
Right.
For people who maybe, you know, they may have the head knowledge of God still being in the healing business, and they may believe it in their head, but they kind of have doubts that he really does
right.
until you've experienced it. Like for you, I
sure.
imagine it'd be really hard to doubt that he has that power.
Oh,
absolutely.
I know that
absolutely.
He healed me, and
yeah.
and I've been able to share that testimony on the Grand Ole Opry, on the televised portion. Mm-hmm. Bill Anderson interviewed me, and I got to tell it.
Wow.
Crook and Chase on the Crook and Chase show, Lori Ann, you yeah. know, asked me about it, and she was tearing up while I shared it because it was a dark hour in our lives and an unexpected storm, but I've been totally healed, and I have no problem sleeping. I tell them I can sleep driving the bus.
I don't want to hear that.
Right, right.
And I'm on no medication, and it's helped my writing as well.
When you were diagnosed with the cancer and when you went through the depression, the beginning of the depression, what was your current status in gospel music? Did you just all of a sudden kind of come to a stopping point? And what did the industry think was going
yeah,
on? Did they know?
in early 1990, Candy had resigned from our group, and we had a meeting in February of 90. Mm-hmm. We were going great guns. Candy had married about 3 years before, had a two-year-old mm-hmm. daughter, our granddaughter, Jasmine. And so it was just going great. And Joy and Trent running their business, their bus leasing business from the road a lot of the time, mm-hmm. had neither one started their families. So we had a meeting to talk about a new bus, new sound system, and the coming year of dates. And so Candy had a surprise for us. She said, Kent's going to evangelize, and he wants me and Jasmine with him. Mm-hmm. So that wound up the Hemp Hill family mm-hmm. at that point, early in 90. So LaBriska and I just went to Harper, the booking agency, Harper Agency, and they said, well, we've never booked an evangelistic group before, but if that's what you want to do, we'll book it. So LaBriska and I then were just working as a duet with Trax. Mm-hmm. Up until that time, we'd had a full band, bus driver, and the whole thing. So we bought a new car, and we had soundtracks, and we were back on the road. So then in October comes the colon cancer. Some of the my friends in gospel music did see me. I remember seeing Ron Henson one day at Sam's.
Yeah.
He said, Joel, you've got to make it, man. You've got to make it. He said, a lot of us are watching you. And for our sakes, you've got to make it. I saw Ed O'Neill one day at the mall. Mm-hmm. And, of course, LaBriska, actually, now, she just kind of led me around like a child. I just couldn't deal with
True.
It.
True.
I mean, Daniel, if I needed to go to California today, I could get out here on a highway and hitchhike if I needed to.
Right.
That's just, I'm that kind of person.
I
travel all over a big part of the world. But at that point, if we went to a mall, I clung to LaBriska. I was afraid I'd get lost and wouldn't know the way.
I told him we were Velcroed together, and I didn't like it.
I was afraid I'd get lost and couldn't get back home. I mean, that's a crazy thing, and it's like a spirit of fear had taken me over. I had never been a fearful person. I'm an alligator hunter. Mm-hmm. Next week, I'm supposed to be in Louisiana alligator hunting, and I've killed dozens, really.
You jump on them like Steve.
Well, no.
No, he doesn't. He better not.
No, I don't do it like that. But anyway, I mean, I'm just not a fearful person.
Yeah.
But for that 2-year period, I was.
Tell me about I was going to go back. I just thought of a song you guys did. I can't think of the title of it.
Partners in Emotion.
Yeah, that's right. Partners
we sang that today.
Did you really?
Yeah. He's a romantic.
Yeah.
And he writes love songs to me every now and then.
Yeah.
So when he does, we put them on our CDs. And Partners was the first one, wasn't it,
that you wrote me? Yeah.
And then from there, we have one on each one, but I think that's a wonderful song.
I just thought of that when you were telling about that story.
Yeah.
We share a precious family. Our addresses are the same. We share mourning over coffee, and we share a name. We've shared many joys and sorrows, precious friend that we have known, though we're two very different people, we are one in flesh and bone, and we are partners in emotion as the years go by, and whatever makes you sad brings tears to my eyes. I can't always make you happy, but I'm happy when I try, 'cause we are partners in emotion, you and I.
We love flowers in the springtime, love the colors in the fall. We love
walking by the ocean or holding hands in the mall. We love church on Sunday morning
amazing grace, never alone.
We love to bow our heads together, and we still love an old love song,
'cause we are partners in emotion
as years go by.
And whatever makes you sad brings tears to my eyes. I can't always make you happy, but I'm happy when I try, 'cause we are partners in emotion, you and I. We've shared lots of tears and laughter,
and time keeps moving on.
Someday we'll share forever, and now we've even shared this song, and we are partners in emotion
as years go by.
And whatever makes you sad
brings tears
to my eyes.
I can't always make you happy,
but I'm happy when I try,
'cause
we are partners
in
emotion, you and I. I love you, darling.
I love you.
Sweethearts, Joel and Labriska Hemphill. Before we wrap up this week's program, let's go back to the conversation with Joel and Labriska.
Tell me about your relationship with Bill Gaither. And obviously, if this all took place, we're talking about during the early to mid-90s era. Yeah. That's when his thing was getting started, too. And I know you guys were on those videos.
I want to say this. He was in deep depression when that first video was aired on mm-hmm. television. And we had gone to bed that evening and was watching television. We were watching the 700 Club, I think is where it came on. Mm-hmm. And Bill's first video came on, and it just bowled us over. And we just laid there, both of us, and wept watching that. And so I got a hold of Bill and told him I had no idea was going to do it again.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he even knew he was going to do it again.
Right.
But I just wrote him a note and told him how wonderful it was. Well, he decided to do another one, and he called to see if Joel and I could be on that. Well, he didn't know where Joel was as far as his battling all of this depression. He had no idea. And he called and wanted us on there, and I said, Bill, you may as well ask Joel to go to the moon. I said, because he can't do that. He's in deep depression. There is no way we can come do that. And so when he did the next one, he called again. And by then, Joel was healed.
That was the landmark video.
Right.
And I did He's Still Working on Me.
Right.
Just healed and walking on out of it.
Yeah.
And they shared that.
If you see that video, though, you can see the difference in him then and now, because he was healed, but he had to walk out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it on him a little bit.
Yeah, and Bill's a very good friend. We worked together on dates back in the 70s when it was the Gaithers and the Slaughters, and then they'd bring in another group. So we worked with them even in Canada. We've been in their home, swam with them in their pool, ride in Bill's old convertible. And
we talk on the phone.
Yeah, they're good friends. We love them.
You've been through all those decades of gospel music, and here we are now in the 21st century. What do you think of the state of today's gospel music? And if you could pull the strings and kind of choose the course of gospel music, What would you do differently, or how would you direct that course?
Well, that's a tall order, Daniel. It is. And I'm very hopeful about gospel music. I really believe there are some great young groups out there that, you know, we heard some this morning at one of the breakfasts, and I was moved. I sat there and teared up, and I was blessed. And
some good songs.
Good songs. You know, obviously we want better songs. I like the deepest, not necessarily theologically, but I mean that move you the deepest.
Sure.
Because that's the difference in our music and secular music.
Mm-hmm.
Our music has a message of hope, and it's up. And, you know, we know we've read the back of the book, and we know that, you know, God is going to come through and straighten this thing out. He is.
He
it was finished at Calvary. We're just walking it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd like to see us try to write better songs. And I spoke to the promoters this morning. I'm very sympathetic to what they do because they have a tough job. We don't always have the answer about putting the people in the seats. I really think that the Gaither, well, let's just call it a revival that happened in gospel music as far as everything picking up. I believe that was ordained of God. You know, early on, Bill called me one day and he said, "Joel, I didn't think of this." He said, I know that it was, you know, an act of God. God did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to God be the glory. You know, our group experienced a revival back in the 80s. We just readjusted our focus, and that's what we always have to do. We always need a course correction.
Sure.
You know, I don't know. I don't certainly don't have all the answers, but I'm hopeful about gospel music. And, you know, I've been a minister since I was 19 years old, and I'm so thankful for my walk with God. I do try to find the will of God in my life, and as a minister, help others see, you know, what his will might be from his word. But I think God cares about gospel music. It's good music. The message is there.
Yeah.
That's what I like about Southern gospel music. You do not have to search for the message. It's just right out.
I wonder who you're talking about.
I wonder who you're talking about.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
And so let's just all try to do it better and you know, and glorify God and exalt his son, Jesus Christ. I just think great things are going to happen.
You guys still live in Nashville?
We live in Nashville. We just recently sold our home on Dickerson Road. We've lived there for 32 years.
Yeah.
It was a two-story house, and we got tired of the stairs. The older you get, the less you like stairs.
It was too big for us. Yeah. The children are gone. We sold it to a Christian school. They made a Christian school out of it.
And we're out in the country, and we have chickens and dogs and cows and a donkey, and we're country folks.
And you had a farm in Louisiana,
yeah,
right?
We did, uh-huh.
Yeah. Was that West Monroe?
West Monroe.
Well, it's so good to catch up with you. Let's do this again.
Thank you, Daniel.
Bless
for asking.
You.
We enjoyed it.
Those were the voices of Joel and Labriska Hemphill, our guests today. Let me give you a couple of websites to bookmark and remember to check out. If you want to know more about the Hemphills, in particular, Joel and Labriska, their website is thehemphills.com, H-E-M-P-H-I-L-L-S, thehemphills.com. If you want to hear more of today's conversation with Joel and Labriska, you can do that online. Download the MP3 audio interview at danielbritt.com.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.